You're listening to In the Right Mind with Chris Wright, a show that takes a deep dive into the human spirit, where we share stories of hardship and hope, told by people from all walks of life. Chris is a certified health and wellness professional and, like his guests, has overcome profound challenges to achieve success and happiness. Through them, we learn what it takes to live life in the right mind.
All right, we are back for another episode, and today we have a very special guest, Danielle Burnock, an international award-winning author, speaker, podcast host of her own, which we will talk about, trauma-informed self-love coach, which for me just kind of defines my mission in life to figure out how to love myself through trauma, which is the endless journey. And I really hope we can dig into that. And amongst all of that, proactively working with other people and doing podcasts like you are today. So I am super pumped to talk to you. I'm excited to learn about your experience and what you do today. Talk a little bit, obviously about your own life and what you do on the coaching side. And I want to first and foremost, thank you for doing this with me today. I mean, just to kind of kick it off.
Well, thank you for having me. I love doing podcast interviews and just talking about things and having great conversations with people like yourself.
That's awesome. Awesome. So just to kind of dive right into it, and where I'm curious how you, from a experience perspective, what you've gone through, can you tell me or us collectively as a podcast a little bit about your own experience with childhood trauma? I'm interested in kind of this, from the story behind what inspires you to do what you do today.
What inspires me to do what I do today was the response I got to my first book, Emerging with Wings. Because I wrote that book and threw it out there, was terrified and was afraid someone would actually read it. And then the response I got from that, of people resonating with my story and a particular quote that's in there, it really astounded me. I was not aware of how pervasive childhood trauma is. I didn't know it was an epidemic. I had been so stuck with dismissing my own and not really owning it until I wrote that book that it just wasn't a thing. But now I get that, and I want to help other people open their eyes to it's a thing. And you think you don't have it? You probably do. Let's see.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, you not to get sidetracked so early on, my ADD's kicking in quick here. you bring up the just kind of dismissing it, right? Like that's such a common thing where people who have, and as somebody who has childhood trauma, you know, parents dying and watching one of my parents die, I mean, it's one of those things that I never really wanted to talk about because I almost felt like it shouldn't have existed, or there's going to be some kind of weird negative reaction to it.
Well, there is, with some people, there's a stigma around it. And
yeah,
there's a whole thing out there, and I don't like it, but I understand it. But I still don't like it. The whole big T trauma and little T trauma. Because the quote from my book that's gone viral starts with trauma is personal. You know, trauma is not the incident. Trauma is the wound that happens inside of your soul, inside your brain, inside your body, because the body keeps a score. I mean, it's stuck somewhere. It's not an incident. The incident either did or didn't do it, because some people can go through the exact same thing and come out fine. And someone else is just completely devastated. So it's not the incident. So the big T, little T, I don't like that because it causes comparison. And that's where people always little T. So, you know, that makes people want to dismiss it. Oh, it wasn't bad enough. It wasn't really a thing. I was being a wuss. I should have been stronger. I shouldn't have this. They shouldn't have that. Whatever. You dismiss it. But my trauma is a big pile. There's lots of it. And now I can say that it sounds funny because at the beginning, I didn't really own that it really was really a thing. It was like, you know, people talk about, well, I had some things happen or that was hard, and they find other ways of putting it. But if you'll call it what it is, you're facing the direction of getting healed from it. You have to call it what it is. But that is like the first step. And My trauma actually started with something I just learned the term for it in the last few years. It's called childhood emotional neglect. And Dr. Janice Webb is the person I learned it from. She's got a book called Running on Empty. An awesome book. I tell everybody about it. And what that is a child doesn't get their emotional needs met that they needed. And it's so there, it leaves a hole. So it sets them up to be a target for other things in life, which that's what was my story. Because of the emotional neglect, which can happen 12 different ways, according to Dr. Janice Webb, and my upbringing fit into three of those. And so my emotions were mangled just by that. So when the other traumas occurred, it was like chipping away at something that was already broken, Because I had trauma at church, trauma at home, trauma at school, trauma in the neighborhood. I mean, just all the places.
Right.
I had bullying. Right. I had shaming. I had rejection. I had multiple deaths that took place. I watched my dad die in moments, and it sounded awful. He had a cardiac event and made god-awful noises. And it was terrifying. And then my mom went manic because, you know, that's her husband. But, you know, I'm a kid, so I'm not thinking about my mom's husband. I'm thinking about my dad.
Right.
And, but she was a real stoic person. Both my parents were very authoritarian, very stoic. So when she went like off the rails, that was another trauma in addition to that. So it's like, I had all the things. By the time I became an adult, which I'll call it when I got married, which was actually before I became an adult, according to science, because science says your prefrontal cortex doesn't become done till you're 25. So I was married with two kids before I was 25. Right. But I was a mess. I was an emotional mess.
I didn't realize, just like a random note again, that it was 25 for the prefrontal cortex. I guess that makes sense, actually, because I was doing a lot of dumb shit before 25.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. It's somewhat recent, like within the last year, I found that out. My daughter cracks me up because we talk about things. It's a whole story of why I have kids. I can't get into that. But I didn't want them to suffer because of my trauma. I didn't want to have kids at the beginning. God had a play in that. I won't get into all of that. But so I've talked with my kids about it. I've apologized to them about things. And, you know, my daughter came to me when she was reading her journals and said, if I want to talk about something that happened, do you mind? I said, oh, bring it on. I'm like, bring it on. Let's talk about this. Let's get to the other side. Cause I'm sorry already. Cause I'm probably guilty. And, you know, cause you have to do that. I know that I did a lot of things wrong, but I did a lot of things right. Yeah. They really encouraged me. But my daughter, like I said, she cracked me up. She said, Mom, you were married with two kids and didn't even have a whole brain. The compassion my kids have on me is just wonderful. I got great.
Lovely.
Kids.
Yeah. That's awesome. It's interesting too, you know, like the what was the terminology you used? The emotional
childhood emotional neglect.
Childhood emotional neglect.
CEN.
I'm gonna have to. So I've heard the term, and I, you know, it's one of those things that, and I'm not a psychologist or qualified to have these conversations, but you know, from my perspective, and I only speak from my experience. Anybody who wants to, you know, shit on me for, you know, credentials, but that portion of it is so important, right? And I want to say up to the age of, let's say, 7, you know, whatever the science is that backs that up, but not having, and this is something I reflect on consistently, is thinking that, okay, well, my parents were there for a short time, but they really weren't there. So I went into this survival mode, and of course I didn't understand this at the time, right?
You're
I went
a kid.
Into the survival right. I mean, I'm 6 years old running around the streets and like finding food and all these different little things that in my head were normal, right? And I think a lot of that had to do with the emotional side, just me realizing, okay, I'm out for myself at this point, right? And then having my own son and looking at him at 6, 7 years old, I just think, wow, what the fuck? Like, it just blows my mind.
I'm so glad that you do that. I tell people in my clients and on podcasts, because adults will look at their trauma as an adult. And so yes. they'll dismiss it.
Yes.
But see, what you did with your son, you looked at your son and you thought about your trauma and you're like, whoa.
100%.
It's like you got to look at someone who is that age that you can have some compassion on and go, wow, I went through that. Ugh.
Yeah. And it's... And it wasn't until I had a child where I really started reflecting on like just how bad it was and like saying, wow, this is not normal, you know? And to your point earlier, I'm you know, connecting the dots is I didn't want to address it and talk about it, you know, probably up until I was 30, let's say, and I didn't want to really acknowledge that it happened to me. So I went into this, you know, disassociation mode and I just never really connected the dots that it was me who went through it until I had a kid. And I saw like, oh my God, like there's been several times I've had breakdowns where I just break down into tears because I'm like, oh my God, I actually went through this, you know? And so I not to get too off the path on this one, but I love that you brought that up. And I have a feeling kind of going into my next question here that the two are somewhat relatable. So I know through your practice and what you do to kind of to support others through your business, you have, I guess, this four-step process, which is the self process, correct? Mm-hmm. Can you walk me through what the four-step process is and how it helps people overcome and improve and I guess find more self-love, right? I know that you work with 50 and beyond for the most part, or that's kind of where your niche is. But I'm just interested to hear with anybody, right, how the self process works and what it means.
Well, I picked self on purpose, very, very intentionally for two reasons. One is because that's where our choices reside, are in our self. Because no one can change my life, only I can do it. So if anything's going to change, I have to do it myself. You can't do it for me. A counselor can't do it for me. A pastor can't do it for me. The neighbor can't do it. Parent can't do it. I have to do it myself. So it focuses on the self. That's like, if you want anything, you got to do it.
Yeah.
So that's the first and foremost thing. And the other thing is, because I'm a Christian and part of my trauma happened in the church, and part of it is mangled theology. And the self was this evil thing. And the self is not an evil thing. The ego can be pretty nasty. And I believe that's what, you know, the Bible's talking about when it talks about the self in there. It's not talking about who we are. And the self is who we are, our mind, our will, our emotions, and our choices and things like that. It's who we choose to be and all that aspect. So I want to hone in on that part of who we are and empower that part to make the choices by intention to live the life we want to live and to heal. So it has to start with the self. And so self stands for see, expose, love, and free. And it's a cyclical process. You don't just go through it once and you're all done, ta-da, because, you know, healing from things is just not that simple.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you have to go through it over and over again. And the S for C is it's for about awareness. You become aware of whatever you're dealing with versus like you start on the surface and you just see, you become aware because you can't do anything about something you can't see or that you refuse to see.
Right.
So
kind of like having
you,
emotional intelligence. I mean, just understanding what's going on. Sure. I love it.
Yeah. So then after you see and acknowledge this thing, then the next one is E is expose. You have to go underneath. You have to go and find the why. Why is that there? What caused that to come to be? You have to get down to that. And then L stands for love because we need to love ourselves to give ourselves courage. Because it takes courage to do the work. And if you won't do the work, you're going to stop at the E and you're not going to go anywhere.
Right.
So you have to fill up on love. You have to love yourself. You have to get love in some way. Me, like I said, I'm a Christian. So I fill up on the love of God and learn to love myself because I used to hate myself so badly. I would hurt myself on purpose. And I tried to kill myself as slowly as possible because I thought that was the best way to just torment myself because I hated myself so badly.
Wow.
But love is so powerful because love drives out fear. It empowers us to take that step because we are afraid of doing the work. So the love is what will empower us to go and do it afraid anyways and give us the courage to move forward. And then F stands for free. And that's an action step. That's something that you do to take a step to your freedom. And then, like I said, it's cyclical. You have to go through it again, because then after you go through that one time, whatever you saw the first time, and you go through that whole thing because you take a step to address what you saw, then you go through it again. Well, what do I see now? You know, did that work? Did it not work? How did it work? And you work through it again. And it's different for everybody because of how it shakes out through the process.
Yeah. No, I appreciate the context on that. And you kind of you answered a little bit of the next part, which was, you know, kind of incorporating how faith plays the role in your approach to the healing and self-improvement, right? So you had some, which is interesting to me, because it's, you have a lot of courage, a lot of strength to have had some of that trauma through the church, but then figure out a way to, you know, let's say forgive that or still incorporate that in your process today. And, you know, that's got to be hard. I mean, that's, you know, that's one of those things that has to be very difficult to go through and then still be able to have that faith. I mean, I don't know if you want to get into that. And the only reason I bring that up is I, you know, going into the churches as a kid, and I had a long period of time where I just said, yeah, you know, God, you really hurt me on this one. You know what I mean? And it's, if you're really out there, why would you do this? You know, like, why would this happen or why would that happen? And being more focused on what's happening to me and, you know, blaming that on, you know, a higher power. And yeah, so it's interesting. So you've been able to incorporate this into your program today, despite any traumas that you've endured, right? Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I just want to know. I just want to say that that's remarkable. Yeah.
Well, I got to give credit to God, because I don't think I did it myself. I was like you. I was angry. I blamed him. You killed my grandma. It's all your fault. I hate you. What's wrong with you? And then after, you know, that I tried to prove God didn't exist because of what I'd been taught. He was this big, bad wolf in the sky kind of thing. And so I'm like, I didn't want God to exist. So we got to prove God doesn't exist. But I failed at doing that. Instead, he came and pursued me. I wrote about that in my book, Emerging with Wings. He pursued me in ways that I didn't have a clue. He came and he found me. I went through all the things at the church. It's a whole great big long story that's in my book. But my parents stopped going to church. I kept going, give you the cliff notes. And I had that emotional neglect. So I wanted to be a part of the church. I wanted to belong somewhere because I felt like I didn't belong at home. I wanted to belong somewhere. I didn't belong at school. I didn't belong at home. I got to belong somewhere. So I tried at the church, which, you know, I loved it in certain things, but, you know, there were people there. And people screw up. And they screwed up royally. And they screwed up royally because I went through all the membership kind of stuff that they did in this church. And I got baptized in the whole nine yards and everything and went for the one Sunday I'm going to be made a member and all that jazz. I was really excited because I had emotional neglect, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to be long, you know, the angels are going to sing and everything, you know, kind of thing. But instead of them accepting me, they rejected me. And I was sitting in the front row of the church, excluded from membership in front of the entire church as a child.
Wow.
And it's like, I was devastated, devastated. But God came and pursued me and never gave up on me, even though, you know, all my eating disorders and drugs and all the awful things I got into. I mean, I got into a lot of self-defeating behaviors and self-harming, lots and lots of it for a while. And then even after I, you know, returned to the faith, so to speak, in a way, which was very crooked and mangled too, because like I said, he was a big bad wolf in the sky. So it was more out of fear than, you know, love kind of thing. But it's like, he's love. The Bible says God is love. And he has proved that to me. It took a long time, but he didn't give up on me. I have a little book I give away at my website called Love's Manifesto, where I share how it took 34 years God to convince me that he loved me, because I was convinced he loves everyone but me. He loves everyone else. You know, that song, Jesus Loves Me, you know, and all that. He loves all of you.
Right. He's not talking about me. He's talking about.
Yeah, that's where I was at because of what had happened in the church. And so my personal relationship with God is what's brought me through that. And so I do have, I've been very suspicious in things in the church. I raised my kids in that, which they had their own little issues and stuff with that, because that wasn't perfect either.
Right.
But it's like, I believe that the whole gospel is God loves you. And so how do you feel about that? Go talk to him about it.
Right.
You guys go have your relationship and, you know, find out the things. I'm not here to indoctrinate anybody. I'm here to share the love of God. That's my thing. Go talk to him.
Yeah, I like that approach, actually, because it's not intrusive. It's just very, you know, hey, the relationship is between you and God, right? Mm-hmm. It's not any specific kind of God. It's just whatever you feel like that relationship is. I actually really like that. I mean, I think that that's a...
Well, I do have a specific God. It's Jesus. So I don't want to be vague there and be misunderstood. So
yeah, my apologies. Yeah. So I mean, from my perspective, it's just a good way to look at, and I'm aligned with you on all of that, but it's just a good way to look at it. Right. It's just, okay, hey, identify what that relationship is. Talk to him, right. Talk to, you know, and for the sake of lack of controversy, talk to your higher power and make sure that that's, you know, that relationship's there. So, no, I really like that. I like that outlook. I mean, I think that that's a good way to approach it, to be honest with you. You have the mantra, love yourself from survive to thrive, which I like. How did you come up with that? Was that all part of the journey when you first started doing self-improvement, self-help? Was that just part of, okay, hey, this is how I'm feeling, so I'm just coming up with this mantra? I'm curious where that stemmed from.
It kind of evolved. I started with a different one and then got to survive to thrive. And now I'm actually circling back to the first one I had, which is connecting people to the love that heals. Because survive to thrive, I mean, it's nice and I get it, but it's gotten like kind of old out there, like overused, like a cliche kind of thing. So I'm actually circling back to connecting people to the love that heals. And let's talk about that love. But in loving yourself, I still believe that. And from surviving, because surviving is good. If you survived, it's a good thing. But you can have so much more than that.
Yeah.
But it takes work to thrive. And you have to love yourself enough to do the work to go take that journey, to embrace the change from survive to thrive. Because it will be a change. And people balk at the idea of change. So it's like you have to embrace that change.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's I just thought it was kind of catchy, you know, and it's I like the idea. Like anytime I see something that is, you know, essentially go from a dark place to a great place.
Yeah.
I just like that. I mean, because it's I feel like there's not as much positivity advertised, for lack of better words, as there is, you know, all this bad shit's happening and in the world and this, you know, so it's just always good to see things that are evolving in a positive direction, right? Rather than a negative direction. And even at work, you know, and this is something I think about all the time. Like I go out to the grocery store or I go, you know, on TikTok for something, whatever it might be. There's just always something. I always come out of it thinking, wow, why are people so fucking negative? You know what I mean? Like there's got to be a better way to do, excuse my language. I'm sorry. I got a really bad mouth.
That's all right.
It's just, you know, it's just one of those things that's just very, I don't want to say frustrating, but it's very disappointing. And I wish there was just a lot more, I'll get real specific with this. You know, for example, you're at the grocery store, because I use that as a reference, and you're checking out, you know, getting your groceries, and somebody walks by you and says, hey, I hope you have a great day. that to me would be like, wow, this person just said, hey, I hope you have a great day. Just a random person, not the person being paid to ring your shit up, right? Just somebody walking by. And at this rate, I feel like if somebody did that to me, I would say, all right, bro, what's the motive here? You know what I mean? Why are you saying that? And that's kind of how I drum up society right now is anything that's a positive or an uplifting action is almost frowned upon. It's like, are you, what do you want from me? Right. And I don't know. It's just a bad, I just hate that, you know?
No, and, I'm laughing because of something that just happened to me recently. And so I created a graphic to respond to it because it irritated me so much. Someone reached out to me on a social media platform. I'm going to be nice and vague because I don't want to expose any person.
Fair enough. Yeah.
They reached out on a social media platform and did something kind. And so I said, thank you. Immediately, they responded with a way that they were trying to get me to become one of their clients. And I'm like, that just erased the whole kind thing. Because right. You wanted something from me. You did that because you wanted something from me. You know, if they would have just reached out to me in the first place with that, then I'd go, hey, they're doing their marketing. It's cool. No, thank you. But that's all right. I don't mind that. But when you do something nice for me and then kind of slip that in there on the side, I find that very manipulative. So I went and found the quote where it talks about loving people, not things, and using things, not people.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a really good example. Not only is that manipulative, it's very that's hard to walk out of now, right? Because it's like, okay, now you've done something for me, and naturally as humans, we're like, okay, well, I almost feel obligated. And it's hard to get out of that feeling, right? For a lot of people.
My business mentor, he's wrote a book. It's an awesome book called Show Up, Filled Up.
Yeah.
And it's about showing up to give, to serve. Instead of showing up to take. Like if you go to a conference, a lot of people, they go to learn, which is good, but they go to, you know, oh, I need to get this from this and get this. Instead, show up with what can you offer?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I want to be that way all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And your point there is well received for me, at least, because just not having the expectations of having something in return when you do something nice, that's the big element that's missing. And even as somebody who's in business and sales and all that, it's like, I see this shit all the time, right? It's like, you know, people come to me, they send me gifts, I get hats, I get products, I get all sorts of weird stuff sent to me in business because I'm, you know, people want me to buy their product or service or whatever it is, right? And now it's hard for me to receive positivity because I don't know what the motive is, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to respond to it. It's like when I buy some, like every now and then I'll go to Dunkin' Donuts or I don't know, Starbucks, whatever your preference is, but I'll go to Dunkin' Donuts out here and I'll buy the person behind me coffee or something, right? And I did this a couple months ago. This is just how fucked this is, all right? Excuse my language again for anybody who doesn't like cursing. I bought this person coffee, all right, behind me. Had no idea who this person was. You know, how would I know? Mm-hmm. I drive out, I go, I'm like waiting at this light to go left wherever I was going. Maybe I was going home, I don't remember. And the person pulled up to me, you know, just like the little roll the window down thing. And I rolled the window down and it was like almost confrontational. They're like, why did you do that? What do you mean, why did I do that? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like at that point, I'm just like, all right, I'm
just
driving off.
Can't I just be nice?
Right. I'm not going to entertain the conversation at this point because it's almost like, all right, like there's, you know, just enjoy your coffee, right? But that's just an example because I had no reservation. I had no reservations for anything. It was just, you know, this person might just.
I know people who do that all the time, and I've never heard about someone doing a confrontation. That's so sad.
It's very weird.
That's
it's
so
very
sad that that person would feel that way. That's so sad. That speaks to them. So. That speaks to them, not you. Yeah. So we got to just keep doing the show up, filled up stuff. Just keep doing the things. Yeah. And it's like, you got an issue, you can have it. Like with this person who did this thing, then they reached out with this thing with, you know, one of those questions that's an either or. So it's like, if I answer it this way, I have to buy this from you. And if I answer it this way, I have to buy this from you. I said, actually, neither. I'm good.
Right. I love it. Yeah, it's always the social engineering in sales is amazing.
Yeah, I don't like manipulation. It's really, that's one of the things that my mom and I worked through. My mom and I, we had issues. And it's one of the things I've written about is how we built a bridge between us. Because she had her own trauma that she didn't know either, because she grew up in a time when, you know, even going to war, you couldn't call yourself traumatized then. It was all your fault. But
wow. Yeah.
So we talked about things after a while. She asked me if I wanted to be friends. I was married. I had kids then. I'm like, yeah. So we sat down and we worked on our relationship together and we talked through all these things and built that bridge together and saw from each other's perspectives and shared things like that. So you can build bridges between people, no matter how messed up it is. If the two people involved are both vested, you can get there.
Yeah. That I absolutely totally agree with you. Totally agree. Now you have, and I want to highlight some of your work because you've put a lot of work into your own development and helping others. So you've got a few books. Emerging with Wings is one, right? Because mm-hmm. You Matter. You have a few. So how can people purchase them? I mean, I want you to have the recognition you deserve here because I, you know, obviously writing takes time and you've put a lot of heart into these. I haven't read them all at this point, so I apologize. But I guess
go read them all right now.
Yeah, right before I present them. Yeah. I always feel bad. It's just like, you know.
I have a podcast. I understand that yeah. I cannot read every book that right. I have them on my podcast. I get it. I don't have any issue whether you have read it or not. If you want to, that'd be wonderful.
I totally
if you
will,
don't,
by the
I
way.
Get it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I totally will. So how can people find them? You know, what can they expect to get out of reading your books?
Well, I have four books. I have the one I give away free at my website called Love's Manifesto. I have it in PDF and audio. You cannot buy it. You can only get it for free.
Awesome.
And I also have A Bird Named Pain, which is available in Kindle and audio. It is a short story. It is an allegory, and it's dealing with the complex emotions that a person has when they have a loved one who has Alzheimer's. Mm. My mother-in-law died of Alzheimer's, and I was a big part of that whole journey. And it was a pain that I had never experienced before. And it's an allegory wow. to help people walk through that. Like I said, it is short. People have loved it, except for one particular person. They said it was short. I'm like, I told you it was short. So I do have one bad review on that. And because this person said it was, you know, too short, I say, well, it says it's short right in it. So, you know, if you don't want short, don't buy it. So I got no issue. Yeah. So
I love people. Especially on Amazon.
Emerging with Wings is my first book. It's a memoir. It's my story. The subtitle is A True Story of Lies, Pain, and the Love That Heals.
Yeah.
And it's written like a love story. It's got a hero, a villain, and the person overcoming their trauma and going through the story. And it's a page turner, according to the people who have written reviews on it, except for one person who...
Jeez.
Gotta have one. You know that you're getting somewhere when you start getting your haters, I'm told.
Totally. Yeah.
So what did he call it? He called it an ejaculative script.
Interesting.
I laughed so hard. I'm like, how could you even come up with that? That's so creative.
Yeah, it's like, what the fuck does that even mean? Like,
I don't
saying?
Know.
Right.
But
give
it's like, I'm not afraid of the negative reviews. I know what it has done for me. It changed my life. It's changed many other people's lives of validating the trauma. Trauma is personal. It does not go away if it is not validated or ignored. It will continue. It will be silent screaming inside until someone goes in there and pays attention to that, and then healing can begin. I just massacred my own quote. So...
I'm totally with you. It's hard. I mean, you have to really want to do it. I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, it, for everybody, I feel like it's different. For me, it took having a child and seeing myself through my kid. You know, some people can reflect before then. I think the biggest thing for me has been, because I don't have the answers to this shit, I just like to talk about it. I think it's something that's not talked about enough. And I think all in all, for me, the journey, as you will, has just been the desire to want to feel better and mm-hmm. want to understand what my mind is. And you brought laughed when you said the prefrontal cortex thing. It's like, I've done more research on the brain than I ever thought I would do.
Yeah.
And it's like, I should have been a fucking psychologist. Like at this point, like I'm probably certified. I just don't have the degree, you know, all the amygdala and how, you know, it's like all these things I'm constantly and all that says is I have a desire to want to understand myself, to want to feel better, mm-hmm. to want to make changes in my own life. It's like in education, something I've always never been good at because I never went to school growing up, you know, because I was in a weird household, but now I love it more than ever. It's like, especially for things that I care about. So I'm learning the passion again and how to care about things and how, you know, so that was a really long-winded way of saying, if you have the desire, just keep going on with it. Eventually it's going to all make sense.
You could just claw your way to freedom and healing. That's what I did. I have a quote in my book that I use all the time because it just comes all the time, is I got to where I am by refusing to stay where I was.
Yeah.
I didn't have a process. Yeah. I didn't have a self process. I didn't have anything to know how to get there. I went to Christian counseling. It made it worse. And then, then later when I sat down to write my book, I'm like, I should probably go into counseling to do this. That'd probably be a smart thing to do. But I went through 3 bad counselors first before I got a good one. And I was looking for one that knew the brain, like you're talking about. I'm like, I don't want to go to a Christian one. I don't want one that, you know, is against what I believe, but I want one who knows the brain, who knows the mind, who knows psychology. Yeah. And that was my counselor who helped me so much. And like you had said, you saw when your kid is when it came to you.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, I really went through that. Wow, it was really bad. And you made that comment earlier. What my counselor said to me with some of the things that I, you know, was rattling off like it was normal. She goes, well, wait, something went terribly wrong. I'm like, really?
I want
to help people know something went terribly wrong. She went on to explain how my childhood should have been in certain ways. And I just sat there like, wow, that's a thing.
right. I'm supposed to feel that way? That's weird. Yeah, I mean, yeah, oh, totally. Like, once I realized it, I was like, oh, shit. Like, that's crazy, you know? My parents.
Yeah, and like my book, Because You Matter, I have that book because you matter. I have that book. It's how to take ownership of your life so you can really live, but it's written as self-help, and it's in small little pieces. So you could even keep it in the bathroom if you don't want to do much at a time, because I love a quote from a friend of mine that, broken hearts can't swallow big paragraphs. And so that's in small little pieces, and it's how to take ownership of your courage, how to take ownership of your pain, how to take ownership of your mess, how to take ownership of your value and the different aspects of your life.
Yeah.
But between all the chapters, I interviewed 10 people, 5 men, 5 women, different ages and stuff, for different kinds of trauma. Because I had my trauma, there was a lot of it, but there's a lot of trauma I didn't go through. Like, I was never sexually abused. And, you know, I never went through a tsunami. And I, you know, lots of different things I have not been through. So these 10 people, it's 10 other ways, you know, to help people, you know, well, did you go through this or maybe like that or something they went through with that or part of their story you can relate to. You know, one of the gentlemen, he lost his best friend in a carjacking. It was murdered. And he had PTSD before it was PTSD.
Jeez,
you know, he thought he was fine till his wife was like, you better get help or we're done.
That's insane.
And that's just one of the stories. There's those stories between the chapters to help people open their eyes to maybe something went terribly wrong in your life.
You know, the thing is, too, like, people don't know. Like, a lot of the things that you're feeling, like, I felt like I was crazy for a really long time. It's funny you bring up the PTSD thing. And I'm just like, man, like, I used to see these therapists and these doctors and whatever, you know, psychiatrists, all these people that were probably making endless amounts of money at my, you know, chaos.
And were they telling you were fine and it was all in your head?
Yeah. Well, like, I would say, I remember this very vividly. I've probably saw a dozen people. And I said, you know, I get this feeling all the time where I feel kind of out of body. Like I'm in a cartoon all the time. almost like you're stoned, like you just smoked a bunch of weed or whatever. And they'd say, oh, it's just anxiety or, you know, whatever. And I would get it really bad at points where it was like, man, I just feel so disconnected. I didn't understand it. I literally thought I was going crazy. And you ready for this? Put your seatbelt on for this one. I'm on TikTok at like age 36, all right, looking, scrolling through TikTok. And I see this post about somebody who's had the same feeling. And I'm like, oh, you know, elaborate, you know, like what's going on. I'm getting excited. I'm like, this sounds familiar. Well, turns out it was depersonalization caused by PTSD and derealization and some of these other parts of this. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, yeah. I've spent all these years and money for people to just say, oh, yeah, you know, I don't know, or you have anxiety or whatever it is, treat me for something completely fucking irrelevant. And I go on a TikTok video. And they're
It's sad. I went to so many doctors, and my mom took me to doctors when I was a kid because my body was somatizing. But they said it was all in my head and I'm making it up and I'm overreacting, I'm oversensitive, and it was all my fault.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but it's like, that's why I loved my counselor. She didn't know childhood emotional neglect. I reached out to her after I learned the term to see if she knew it, and she still didn't know it because she's retired now. But still, she knew something went terribly wrong.
Right, right, of course.
So it's like the doctors could say, well, I don't know what that is, but it doesn't sound normal. I mean, that would have at least been more helpful.
Yeah, it's just interesting to me because – sorry, hold on one second. Hold on. This thing's my headphones are about to die. I had to plug them in. It's just interesting to me that I've been able to find out so much more about myself through my own time, energy, and research than I've ever been able to going in, waiting 2 hours to be seen by, you know. It's just and no harm, you know, nothing against the folks who dedicate their lives and careers to psychology, or, you know, they have to see a lot of people. It's not always evident, you know, the patient doesn't always do the best job of articulating whatever was in the book that they read in college when they were learning about this stuff, right? So it's hard. I mean, it takes time, and it's just interesting. Yeah, I mean, now when I have the episodes, I don't really have them much anymore because I know what it is. Like, I know that it exists and how I get it. You know, it's like, so when I do have them, like, oh, okay, I'm having an episode, you know, is what it is, take a nap or something. Like, I don't stress about it anymore, you know? And just knowing sometimes, being self-aware is a huge stepping stone in feeling better, in my opinion. I mean, just knowing that that you're not the only one who's going through it, you know? So, I appreciate you. I really do appreciate you doing this. Anybody listening, you can go to DanielleBurnock.com. I know that you've got your website up and you can book a call with you. You have your 7-day challenge coaching. You can see your books on your website, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. Any other way that people can get in touch with you? What do you prefer? The website, TikTok,
the website, Instagram? You can access everything at the website. Okay. You can get to my podcast. You can get to my Clarity FM. You can get to all of my courses, to my Victorious Souls community. Everything is there. I made it very central. All of my socials, you can get me there. You can email me right from there. So DanielleBurnock.com is BERNOCK for those who want to make it sound like it has a U in it. So it doesn't.
Fair enough. Well, I appreciate you doing this. It's been very productive. I've learned a lot myself here, and thank you so much again.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Sure.
This has been In the Right Mind with your host, Chris Wright. Join us again next Thursday for another illuminating and inspiring conversation. New episodes of In the Right Mind drop every Thursday. Subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform and never miss an episode. For updates and exclusive content, follow us on social media at @rightsmind. Sign up for our mailing list at rightsmind.com to get access to even more behind-the-scenes content, insights, and special offers. Thank you for being a part of our community and for supporting the mission of In the Right Mind. We're all on our own unique journey. It's important that we share our experiences and learn from each other. Until next time, stay curious, stay kind, and always keep your mind in the right place.